This is Steve Sherlock with another podcast for Franklin Matters. This is the third in the series covering the special meeting the town council held to review the budget in a workshop format. In this section, Susan Gagner, the town controller, continues her presentation reviewing page 6, the fixed cost history. There's a whole lot of discussion around this page on pensions, health insurance, unemployment compensation. All good questions, good answers from Susan and Jeff Nutting, who chimed in from time to time to add some background and insights to the discussion. So let's jump in and listen.
The fixed costs, we have to pay for them. And the breakdown of fixed costs is on the next page. That's when we get into the nitty-gritty. What Jeff and I have tried to do over the past few years, we've noticed the liability insurance has decreased. Jeff has worked very hard with our insurance company to get those costs down. So we've seen a 37% reduction in our liability insurance. Pensions, that's gone out of sight, 69% over 6 years. And that's the Norfolk County retirement system. And that's an assessment that we have to pay. We really have no say-so in that. We get a bill and we pay it. Health insurance, that's grown 36%, but I really feel Jeff and Stephanie, our HR director, when they're bargaining with the health insurance companies, he's really negotiated fair increases. Some years we've had a 0% increase in premiums.
And insurance and employees have taken copay changes twice in the last 4 years to help mitigate it. So even though it's up 36%, that's a pretty good number in the world of health insurance. Mm-hmm. And we continue again to look at other plan design issues that we can bring to the employees so that we can continue to mitigate to the extent possible the cost of health insurance. So.
And the retired teacher's health insurance. In fiscal 9, we budgeted $1.3 million, but we did not spend all that. We had a net savings that returned back to the general fund. I think we probably spent $200,000 less than that. And then in fiscal 10, we budgeted $1,079,000. So we've seen a significant savings from 07 to 10 by doing that.
Susan? I am confused about sort of the numbers on the fixed cost versus the assessment sheet.
Yes.
For the retired teacher health. So on the assessment sheet, this is essentially like claims that were coming in?
No, it used to.
Those were our assessments. When Jeff said the residual claims coming in, fiscal 08 and 09, you see how they're small, 61,000 and 7,500. That's to pay for any outstanding. It's like it's self-insured.
Right.
And you have those residual payments.
Right. You're going to have
transition. We're still getting assessed for those.
Okay.
But those will go away. Eventually, they will be zero.
Because the 05, 06, 07 numbers are,
straight,
you know,
assessments.
And the same as the fixed cost.
Right. What I did, see, I backed it out. I reflected it in the state assessments. Then I backed it out because then I add it over into the fixed cost.
Into the...
Just to show
so it just moves buckets.
Right. And just to show apples to apples.
Yep, okay.
May I ask a question on the pensions?
Sure.
This is very helpful for me just as the average Joe citizen to see exactly how we spent money. And just to kind of eyeballing it, pensions are a big number growing at a fast rate.
Absolutely.
Have you projected that out into the future, like, 10, 20 years? I mean, is this
yes.
a thing that ever tails off?
Or
yes.
We belong to the Norfolk County. We don't have our own pension system. We belong to the Norfolk County pension system, which we're now the largest contributor of because they pulled the county sheriff's office out. But they do an amortization schedule to 2028. And what happens in 2028, all of our unfunded pension liability is supposed to be paid off. Because we did, from 1939 to 1989, it was a pay-as-you-go system. So every community in the Commonwealth, including the state, had this huge unfunded liability. The law changed and required everybody to have a 30-year funding schedule by 2028. What happened since then, however, there's two false premises, as far as I'm concerned, but I'm not an actuarial. Each pension system is based on an 8% return on investment every year forever. So that's great when you're making 22%, but when you're going in the hole, So that's one item. And then in many years when the county was making a lot of money in investments, in lieu of continuing us to pay a growing amount, they made a political decision not to do it. So instead of shortening the schedule, they just said, oh, we'll let you off easy for many years. Well, that's a bad idea. So the legislature last year added 2 years to the funding schedule to 2030, and there's legislation now that will be looked at in the next month that changed the schedule to 2040 because the losses are so horrendous in 08 that people are going to go underwater just in pension liability. Norfolk County at one point was up to $612 million and got down to $440 million. Now, obviously, they've recovered tremendously. So that number is going to haunt us for a long time. Employees pay 10. We don't pay Social Security. Employees pay 10% of their pay. 11 for new employees, right? All employees pay 5. All new. So new employees are actually paying more than it's going to cost, but they're making up for the old employees. Because old employees only pay 5%, 7%, 9%. Those will eventually fade into history. But so there's two issues. And then it's also based on salaries. As salaries go up, then pensions, that feeds into pensions. So there is a plan in place, but that number will continue to rise until at least 2030. And then if the county votes to extend it, but I'm hoping it's local option so each town can look at it. So
the good news, the teachers are not in Norfolk County.
Right,
so,
I understood that.
I mean, the teachers, which is probably the largest employer in town, the teachers and the administrators are all in the state pension.
Right.
The teachers
and the other thing has happened.
It's all self-funded.
Because we take all non-teachers, so custodians and aides. You know, Franklin, if you go back 20 years ago, how many employees did we have? So as the town grew and we added police, fire, custodians, et cetera, there's more folks in this pool than there was 20 years ago as well. So we have more employees, people living longer, salaries going up, and an investment assumption that, while maybe was great for 50 years, really hasn't helped us in the last many.
Thank you.
So two other things related to the pension. The first question is and it applies to both the questions around both school and municipal employees. Employees are putting 11% in a year like 2008. It was as if they put in 5.5% because the markets cut everything in half.
Doesn't matter.
The town has to make up that gap.
Well, yes, eventually.
Is that
because,
correct?
Well, what happens is the pension system has a study done every 2 or 3 years for the next few years. So if you're off cycle. In a bad year, you don't have to make it up, but
the unfunded pension liability.
Yeah, that grows. That's correct.
Grows
now.
Because of that.
What other folks don't know is that while you put money in, your money only earns usually between 2 and 2.5% interest.
Well, that's what you get credit.
So that's
for.
What you get credit for. So if you left after 8 years, you'd get your original investment plus about 2 to 2.5% per year because the system keeps the rest to help fund the schedule.
Right.
So yes, and if the whole system loses 5%, they're going to make it up in year 2, 3, or how depends when the next actual study is due.
Does that study kind of just resets the whole long term?
Well, last year, Jim and I actually went down and fought because they wanted to increase our assessment 2.5%. We said, "What are you crazy? That has to go up at least 5%." Because otherwise it's going to go like this, and then it's going to go like this. And the one thing we like, as much as we don't like rising budgets, is consistency. And they eventually voted 4.5%, but we were the only two down there. We were the only town there saying, this doesn't make sense to go down just for the sake of it, and then you know you're going to hit with a 9% next year. So we've been trying to get the county to, get a schedule that's realistic that we can count on, that doesn't go up and down or doesn't change, from year to, so say it's 6% increase, at least you know that.
So the other question related to it is, I understand the 30-year schedule to get to fully funded, or the 40-year schedule, or 100 years, whatever ends up passing
right
through. is there, based on that analysis and likely retirement dates, is there a point where the assets flip, where you actually don't have any assets?
In the fund?
Based on the retirements. So based on the retirement schedule, the payouts that are required to retirees,
right.
Is there a point where your outflows to retirees exceed what you're able to pay?
Well, in 20, when the system is fully paid off, I haven't seen the recent schedule, but their bill gets cut more than half. Because we're still paying unfunded pension liability for 50 years. So if you look at some towns who are 100, well, they were until the recent years, there were a handful of towns that were 110% funded.
Wellesley
and a couple others. So they just had that money in the fund.
Right.
So that stays there. Now they went back under 100 because losses in the market. So now they'll have to go back up. So they still would have to put some amount of money in to match to pay for the pensions. But you know, the number goes up and up and up for our lifetime, put it that way.
Right. But if the unfunded grows to a big enough number, the plan becomes illiquid.
Well, that's why they're
looking to extend it, because in some cities that, you know, it'd be an $8, $10 million increase in the assessment. So,
but you still have to pay give the payouts to the retirees. Oh, so at what point does it become so crippling to the rest of the budget where nothing else is left?
Well, that's why the elected officials want to keep pushing the schedule up. The issue is whether there should be pension reform.
Well, I understand there could be action at the state level pushing it out, but
we can't do anything.
Really? But will we still face the bill?
We get a bill, we're required by law to pay it, we have no say in the matter other than go to the pension board and ask them,
right.
But the entire system, and same as the teachers even, you know, pay for it, is statutorily controlled.
Sure.
And the teachers, they control a lot with the COLAs. And trying to keep a limit on the cost
right.
of living.
The COLAs,
they've tried to sort of control some of the liabilities by keeping those really low.
But I think the pension will continue to grow.
Yeah. So, I'm just looking at 7% of the budget, so it's a big number, but it's probably not an unmanageable number. But what happens if it gets to be 20% or 30%?
We have less employees.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you could have go down to one employee if you have such a long tail from retired employees. And,
right.
I don't have an answer. I'm just curious about the math behind it, because those are the things that I think about for the long term.
Well, the math is pensions and health care continue to increase. There's less dollars available to do everything else. That's not going to change. The funding schedule obviously would lessen the slope of increase if they extended it. But and I know I'll speak for us. We're down 45 positions in 5 years. Probably going to be down some more next year if I'm looking at the budget.
Sure.
The school doesn't pay theirs, but they're down, I don't know, 80? I don't know how many jobs you're down. What?
Over 100.
They're down as well. You don't see it here. But we do pay, they do pay retired teachers' health insurance. So part of it is those fixed costs continue to, they have to be paid. So there's no real answer.
Under the Enron scandal years ago, wasn't this part of the retirement system, was to have all the communities, companies, et cetera, pay into a fund to fund this? And that's what you're doing with this number?
Right.
Yeah. So that's what the whole basis of it is, to pay this unfunded liability based on the government not wanting companies to walk away without funding their pensions.
What's not on this sheet is we have a $40 or $50 million unfunded health insurance liability.
Right.
Okay, that we need to address at some point.
Right.
That goes with the retirees, because statutorily we have to pay for retirees' health insurance. And if we don't address it, it's going to end up being just like the pension system, that 20 years from now, oh my God, it's $4 million bucks, $5 million, whatever the number is, because we haven't started to put some of the money away. So our hope is, you know, within, I don't think next year just because of the economy, but as the economy grows, we have to start putting money aside. I can't tell you what health insurance is going to be in 5 years or 20 years, but, you know, people are retiring younger and living longer.
Right. And you've
okay?
got
to
pay.
So
they're not taking enough out of their paychecks to cover the retirement or the
health
insurance.
Right.
Well, the health insurance they don't, but
they don't.
The retirement they're not taking enough out. And that's what it's coming down to.
So the health insurance expenses that we see there are on an operating basis. There's no amount in there that is forward-looking.
No,
and that's a big issue. In fact, we have an actual study due to us. We have to have one every couple of years. It will show us our unfunded liability, and it's going to be a big number. It was $50 million a couple of years ago. I think it will go down a little because, one, we get out of the GIC, so you can see that number's dropped.
Right.
We have less employees, but it's still going to be in the, $40-50 million range for us to deal with.
And that's an unfunded liability of today, based on the expected retiree pool.
There's another actual study, and the other problem is that as that grows, it goes against our assets, and pretty soon you have less assets than you have liabilities, almost like the pension you were talking about. Because this number, the health insurance is going to grow by leaps and bounds compared to, the pension system if healthcare continues at double-digit inflation. So that's an issue that isn't here but needs to be here sooner rather than later.
Do you know of any other towns, any examples of towns doing this differently?
Yeah, there's a handful of towns that thought about retired health insurance 20 or 30 years ago and started putting money away. Arlington, Needham, Wellesley actually passed an override just to fund their unfunded health insurance liability.
Before or after high school.
Pre-funded now, put up like six, whatever it was, because you don't have to put up the $50 million. You just want to put enough money every year to get to that. So I figure what the number was. It was $3 or $4 or $5 million, but they passed an override just to pay for that, so it wouldn't affect the operating budget going forward. So, but I would say the vast majority of communities are in opposition.
And what about pensions?
Statutory right to change the rules for new employees?
No. We have a right to start paying off, but, there's two things that we've thought of internally. One is, as you get a health benefit, why can't part of that cost be for future costs? But that's not allowed by law. Until that happens, a lot of communities are thinking, I'll look the other way, or if my pension returns get better, I'll stick money aside. But, you start and you say you put $100,000 this year and $200,000 the next year and $300,000, and, it takes you longer to get there, but at least you're making some kind of effort.
But could you even move new employees to, like, the 401k?
Not allowed.
Okay. Well, that's
every employee has to belong to the pension if you work more than 20 hours and you don't pay Social Security. So one of the issues, when they talk about pension reform, is how is the next generation of employees going to be dealt with? Because, A, the pension is not really portable. So it traps you to the extent that once you're in the system for a long time, it's really hard to leave. And it's a good pension if you stay 35 or 40 years, which no one does. I mean, if you look at the next generation. So there are a lot of pension issues out there. And there's no consensus on any of them. So,
what did you mean when you said it's illegal? If you're
a Massachusetts employee, you have to belong to pension.
There was an or in there. If you don't pay Social Security.
We don't pay Social Security.
Pay Medicare, tax. There's no or. Okay. If you work less than 20 hours per week, then you go into a.
Over
account, like a 457 or something like that. So.
Next question. On the health insurance, it's Blue Cross Blue Shield. And you look at, because of the actuarials with Blue Cross Blue Shield, we didn't hire those to do ours, right? Where Blue Cross Blue Shield actuarials did the wrong calculations, and now the increases this year for premiums for Blue Cross Blue Shield are going up 30-40%
Well, we actually bid health insurance about every couple years and go to the market. And even though we have Blue Cross, we are actually insured with Maya, which is the Massachusetts Interlocal Insurance Agency. They happen to use Blue Cross as their carrier. Their rates next year are going to go up 1-13%. depending on your experience, and that will come out in the next couple of weeks, what your community is. So the struggle we have with municipal health insurance is twofold. One, we don't have the right to change co-pays without bargaining with 13 unions, and again, the most part of the unions have been very good. And two, we tend to have an older population, which drives up claims. That's not typical of Franklin, that's just typical of, you don't see a lot of 25-year-old people working around here. Maybe in the schools you get some, but certainly not in municipal government. So we have higher claims than the general population just because of who works in local government. So we're not going to go to the market this year. We went last year. But we'll work with our carriers and look at plans again and talk to our employees.
Do you have a two-tier, or do you have to go with one? Can you do a Harvard and a Blue Cross?
No, you know, we made a decision a long time ago, and I've been doing this a long time. Two plans cost us more money because the company wants to capture. You know, if you have two plans and the bad people are in one, I mean, by whatever, you know, I hate to say that. So to spread the risk among one thing is keep the premiums down. So we made a conscious decision a long time ago not to offer multi. And a lot of towns offer 3-4 plans, but I've found that's not a good idea. We're looking at different tiers of benefit options for employers to explore potentially. As a way to save money, we try to keep one carrier. A lot of people said go into the state plan. I don't know if anybody's paid attention to the state GIC, but they just had huge, huge increases on co-pays and maybe premiums because in the good old days, when the GIC made money, they'd turn it back into the state. And in the bad days, the state would pass a supplemental budget to fund the state. Well, they don't have any money supplementally anymore, so they're going to have to live and die on their own. Second thing is a lot of communities joined that were bad risks, and that's why they joined the GIC, because they were getting a better deal. But guess what? What does that bad risk do? It drives up the cost to other folks. And health insurance itself is going up, so we're doing pretty well.
Jeff, do you have the option to pool with other towns to increase the overall pool size if you wanted to do such a thing?
Well, Meyer's actually a pool of 100 and something communities. That's what it is. It's a municipal. It's a Massachusetts. It's already its own pool.
Okay.
Premiums about. I'm going to guess the premiums are $300 million. If you aggregate the pool.
But do we stand alone on our own risk? Or?
Well, we still are risk because we have more than 500 bodies. We're still rated on our own risk as far as whether we're going to go up 1% or 13% on it or whatever on the annual basis plus the medical trend. So we're already in a big pool. We're probably the biggest pool in Massachusetts.
Moving on. Also another component of this cost is our general fund debt. And what's represented here is just the part of debt that is funded through tax levy. Not any debt that's funded through a debt exclusion, not any debt that's reimbursed by the state. It's just strictly...
Or enterprise fund.
So it's just strictly the debt that we pay through our tax levy within 2.5%. That has grown 71% over the 6 years, but it has stayed within the 3.5% benchmark that the town council voted, which was we want our debt capacity to be 3.5% of our total revenues. So even with that growth, we've stayed under that 3.5% cap. So that's a good thing.
The way we try to explain it to people, it's a $3 million mortgage on a $90 million business. So, you know, if you equate it to your home, that's a really small mortgage, but it allows us to continue to reinvest in infrastructure and buildings because if that number disappears, then ultimately there'd be no capacity to fix roofs and do all the things that we have to do to keep up, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of buildings and roads and et cetera. So the plan, the 3.5%, we're at about 3.4 this year. Jim will explain the debt, but I think it's from a financial perspective, it's people say, why are we borrowing so much money? But in the long run, it's going to serve the interest. Otherwise, we'd be asking for debt exclusions every time we wanted to build a building instead of just paying it out of our tax base and not have it and help with property taxes.
Well, even the trash and water proposal is the perfect example, where you can do incremental improvements for the folks of the town. It saves them money, but it's not visible to them that there was, you know, debt involved because it's, you know, within our capacity.
Yeah, we get a lot of bang for the buck out of that 3.5%. Presently, what's under there is the senior center, the fire station,
this building. $6 million for school improvements over the last, the early childhood development center, the recreation improvements, the 7 fields we built, the DPW. It looks like a lot, but if you think of all the improvements in the last 6 years, a lot of you don't see, but it all comes out of that fund.
We hear it as elected officials. We hear it every 2 years. You know, well, you know, where do you get off spending, you know, building a new senior center or a new fire station? And the people don't understand that it all comes down to that 3.5%. And when you really look at what we're paying annually and what we're getting out of it, boy, I'll tell you, it's a huge value.
Yeah, so if you're making $100,000 a year, your mortgage would be $3,500, right?
For the year.
For the year. That's principal and interest.
Principal and interest, that's right. Anyway.
And you said that doesn't include debt exclusions.
Because those are funded with other money.
There's another $1 million in debt exclusions, and then we have water sewer debt that's outside that as well.
And then a portion of the school debt that's refunded from the school building authority, we get like $1 million from that. That's pulled out of here.
Right.
That's not coming from our tax base. Right. And that's what we're trying to reflect on, is what are we paying for out of our tax base?
Right. With the debt how is the debt exclusion paid?
Through property taxes.
But above 2.5%.
Above 2.5%.
And right. I pulled that out of this equation.
No, I'm looking at taxpayer impact, at citizen impact.
When that debt is paid off, that comes off the tax bill.
Right.
It actually goes down a little bit each year, doesn't it?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, all I'm looking at is taxpayer impact as opposed
right.
to.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I got a question. I just wanted to look at the number for the, which I think impacts a lot of things indirectly, but. The unemployment compensation is huge, right?
$100,000.
Yeah, so how is that funded?
This is all funded through budget, tax base.
Right.
But this year will be more.
That's all we funded in our budget right now. If it grows, if it's more than that, we have to come back.
Well, we just added $175,000 to that number of about a month ago.
That's right, that's not reflected. But that didn't come out of the tax base, that came out of free cash. That's why it's not reflected. This is just what comes out of tax base.
In a normal year, the only layoffs that would occur would be non-renewal of school teachers. Normally we would lay off employees, and the school lays off a handful of them every year prior to them being certified. So
so this number, though, represents what?
The $205,000?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that represents 7 or 8 people.
That's
well, it depends. I mean,
I guess the question is, these are just government employees, right?
Those are just the school and town employees that get laid off. In a good year, lots of people get laid off if they get a job. So we might pay $4,000 and they get it because they're laid off. Obviously, this year, no one's getting a job, so unemployment costs, they're taking the full benefit, plus they extended the benefit.
People laid off 2 years ago are still getting extensions.
Right, they're still getting extensions. So
I mean, this $205,000 probably it's not going to cover our liabilities for this year. Like Jeff said, we already voted on $175,000. We may have to do more.
The
issue is we do a pay-as-you-go system. You can choose to pay, I think it's 3/4 or 1% of your payroll, which in a 10-year cycle, you'd be a big-time loser.
Yeah.
So you're better off paying cash.
Yeah.
So most, I don't know anybody that does the pay-as-you-go, I mean, does the, you know, the percentage of your salaries, like the private sector has to do. So
I'm just wondering when that number's going to normalize.
You got that crystal ball. A lot of people
right.
want to see that.
It's a big number. That's all I'm saying. How is it going to be addressed?
It's driven by the economy. But so goes the economy. So goes our insurance payments.
Okay. Any other questions on fixed costs?
Thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.blogspot.com. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is entitled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.